That's good. I'm glad they're doing that this year. Does everybody know each other? Have y'all met Ralph and Margaret? And okay. So we're going to be looking at the book of Jeremiah. Dick and June were with me the first time when we started this in March of 2019. No, 2020 we started in February. And we were about 3 weeks, 4 weeks in, and I get the call, Craig, we're not meeting. And so we haven't met. So it's good to be back and good to pick up. And I'm just gonna start back over at the beginning, needless to say, because nobody would ever remember where I left off, and it wouldn't be fair to those who are new. So what I've done is I have put together a pretty extensive outline of the book of Jeremiah for you to have, and we're going to follow this. We have 12 weeks together, and we will have, but we've got 52 chapters of scripture. So
we just go back so you can tell it twice.
Gonna put me to the test. That's good. I don't mind that at all. But we're going to cover as much of it as we can. Feel free to ask questions if you have any. Jeremiah being a narrative and a historical book, we're just basically learning from the mistakes of the people of Jeremiah's day. The unfortunate thing is, or the challenging thing is, that Jeremiah is eerily similar to 2021, as much of the Bible is. As we learn so much when we read the Word of God, we say that's now. And especially when we read the Old Testament, we see such similarities of the errors of nations and of people that are continually being made today. We're still idolatrous. We're still rebellious. We still don't take instruction well. We still don't like change. We still struggle with obeying God and doing what God is telling us to do. All of these things are still struggles that you and I have today. So Jeremiah will be an easy overlay to the present day, even though it took place many, many, many years ago. Jeremiah is, to me, one of the most gut-wrenching books of the Bible. When you read Jeremiah and all that he went through, especially the first seven chapters, where God is just continually indicting, calling out the people of God over and over again before he really releases Jeremiah to begin his prophecy, his time of prophesying. It'll tear you up. It will do something to you when you read it, because you either, one of two things happen. Either you say, Lord, forgive me because I'm just like they are. Or you look at it and say, Lord, forgive us because we're making some of the same mistakes and following down some of the same paths that they are. So it's a very convicting book, and it can be if we allow it to. So we're going to start our journey tonight. We're going to cover basically chapter one is all I'm going to cover tonight. And I'm going to release you probably fairly early tonight. We'll pick up the pace as we go, but Jeremiah 1 is so important because it sets the tone for the whole book. And one of the things that you will learn, or that perhaps you've noticed, when there is a book of prophecy, whether it's Isaiah or Jeremiah or any of the minor prophets, there's what is called, what most people call, a superscription right at the beginning, or a title. They may give you a title for the book. It's not written by the prophet himself. It's obvious, as we'll see in just a moment. But even though that is the case, and these additions have been made, that doesn't mean that we can ignore them, because especially with the book of Jeremiah, it gives us such a good historical context. So let's just look at those first three verses for just a moment. It says, the words of Jeremiah, the son of Hilkiah, one of the priests who were in Anathoth and in the land of Benjamin, to whom the word of the Lord came in the days of Josiah, the son of Ammon, the king of Judah, in the 13th year of his reign. It came also in the days of Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah, king of Judah, and until the end of the 11th year of Zedekiah, the son of Josiah, king of Judah, until the captivity of Jerusalem in the fifth month. Now, the writer did not do this. Some scribe or someone wrote this in to give us an introduction to the book of Jeremiah. And we can be very glad he did, because look at all the information it gives us. It gives us his name. It gives us his place of birth. It gives us his father's name. All of these things are given to us. And so this is all helpful as we learn about the prophet Jeremiah. And as we see all of this, because the fact that he was the son of a priest is informative. While Jeremiah himself was not a priest, it is informative to us because it helps us to know what kind of family he grew up in. Where he grew up is important to us because it helps us to know the times. He gives us a great framework for the kings that he was serving under while he was serving God. The name Jeremiah is a very interesting name in the sense when you look at the meaning of the name Jeremiah. The name Jeremiah means Yahweh, God, shoots, or God hurls, is what the name Jeremiah literally means. It's a word that is fitting because when you think about someone who shoots or hurls, it's appropriate for Jeremiah because Jeremiah is about to let go of some thunderbolts. When Jeremiah begins to prophesy, his name is fitting because he's going to be letting out some thunderbolts of truth, of divine truth, is what his assignment is. His assignment was to try to help deliver an apostate nation, a nation who had just completely turned their back on God in just about every way. He's also prophesying in what many believe to be one of the most catastrophic periods of history of the ancient world. So Jeremiah's assignment is not for the faint of heart, but his name is befitting. And as we know in Hebrew culture, the parents would name the children by way of the character that they hoped they might reflect in their life somewhere down the road. Perhaps Hilkiah and his wife and Jeremiah's mother had insight as to what God was going to do with Jeremiah, because as we'll see in just a moment, Jeremiah was called before he was born. God already had his hand on Jeremiah. It reminds me, you know, when I think of the New Testament, when I think of Christ's birth, I think it's very interesting that God didn't leave it up to Mary and Joseph to choose his name. God plainly says in the first chapter of Matthew, you shall call his name Jesus. Why? Because he shall save his people from their sin. He didn't leave it up to them to pick just any random name or a family name. God assigned Jesus his name. This is his name, and there was no discussion about it. Perhaps Jeremiah was like that. I do not know that. I don't have historical evidence to back that up. But I do think that his mom and dad, when they chose the name Jeremiah, had insight from God that God was going to have his hand on their child, on their son. And they named him appropriately. Now, it's also important to note that Jeremiah's father was a priest, and they lived in the town of Anathoth. Some people believe, if you were to dig really deep into the study of Jeremiah, some believe that perhaps Jeremiah's father was a prominent priest when the book of the law was discovered during the reign of King Josiah. That story is told in 2 Kings 22. It sounds good, but there's the weight of evidence is weak that was probably his role. But his father was nonetheless a priest. Anathoth was a city that was a that was his birthplace, was a priestly city dating back to the time of Joshua. In Joshua 21:18, we are introduced to the town of Anathoth. Again, there's no evidence that Jeremiah himself ever became a priest like his father, but he was raised in the priestly tradition. And the reason we know that Jeremiah was not a priest is because some of Jeremiah's greatest opposition came from the priest of the day. And some of the things that Jeremiah opposed most vehemently was the priesthood of the day. So Jeremiah, even though he grew up in the home of a priest, was not a friend of the priest. And they were not his friends either, because the priest absolutely did not like and did not want to hear anything that Jeremiah said. They did not want to hear it, and they certainly did not want to have anything to do with it. Now, perhaps the most prominent role for Jeremiah is set forth there in verse 4, where it says, "Now the word of the Lord came to me, saying, before I formed you in the womb, I knew you, and before you were born, I consecrated you. I appointed you a prophet to the nations." Throughout this book, we are going to hear Jeremiah say, "The word of the Lord came to me." We might call this a theme note of the book of Jeremiah. The word of the Lord came to me. And it's found throughout the book. "Thus said the Lord to me." Jeremiah is going to say that several times. "Thus says the Lord," making clear that his words are the words that he is speaking are not his words, but they are words that come from above. And again, he's speaking the word of the Lord in one of the most tumultuous, catastrophic times in ancient history. He prophesied, the word of the Lord came to Jeremiah, began in the 13th year, which would be around 627 BC, the 13th year of the reign of Josiah, who was king of Judah. And it concluded in the 11th year, 586 BC, at the reign of Zedekiah. Zedekiah was the last Judean monarch before the Babylonian captivity. So Jeremiah covered quite a span of history, from the reign of Josiah 13 years in to the reign of the 11th year of Zedekiah during all that time, all the way up to the Babylonian captivity. Now we will see there's two other kings that are in the prophecy of Jeremiah, but hardly mentioned, Jehoahaz and Jehoiakim. And the reason they don't get a lot of attention is because they only reigned for 3 months apiece. They were bad, wicked kings, and they didn't stick around very long. They were killed off, and they were not respected at all. So they don't get much mention. With the king Zedekiah and Josiah are going to be the primary kings that we are going to be associating with in this book. So Jeremiah was called. Jeremiah was born to Hilkiah. His father was a priest. He's from the town of Anathoth. We know that he reigned from the reign of Josiah to the reign of Zedekiah. So we know that much about Jeremiah by the first three verses. So we can be grateful that we kind of got that out of the way. That initial, it's like introducing yourself to one another. If you were to take time to introduce you would share your name. You might share your parents' name. You would share where you're from. You might share what your parents did as you were growing when you were growing up. All of these things are introductory. They're things that you and I would share with one another. So the scribe who put in this superscription, this introduction, did that for us. He wanted us to understand this is Jeremiah, this is who he came from, this is where he's from, and here's the framework of his prophecy. All right, so now let's get down to particulars. As we look at verses 4 through 19, we're going to see the call of Jeremiah. Let's read those verses together and then we'll come back and talk about them. Now the word of the Lord came to me, saying, before I formed you in the womb, I knew you, and before you were born, I consecrated you. I appointed you a prophet to the nation. Then I said, ah, Lord God, behold, I do not know how to speak, for I am only a youth. But the Lord said to me, do not say I'm only a youth, for to all to whom I send you, you shall go. And whatever I command you, you shall speak. Do not be afraid of them, for I am with you to deliver you, declares the Lord. Then the Lord put out his hand and touched my mouth, and the Lord said to me, behold, I have put my words in your mouth. See, I have set you this day over nations and over kingdoms, to pluck up and to break down, to destroy and to overthrow, to build and to plant. And the word of the Lord came to me, saying, Jeremiah, what do you see? And I said, I see an almond branch. Then the Lord said to me, you have seen well, for I am watching over my word to perform it. The word of the Lord came to me a second time, saying, what do you see? And I said, I see a boiling pot facing away from the north. Then the Lord said to me, out of the north, disaster shall be let loose upon all the inhabitants of the land. For behold, I am calling all the tribes of the kingdoms of the north, declares the Lord, and they shall come, and every one shall set his throne at the entrance of the gates of Jerusalem, against all its walls, all around, and against all the cities of Judah. And I will declare my judgments against them, for all their evil in forsaking me. They have made offerings to other gods and worship the works of their own hands. But you dress yourself for work. Arise and say to them everything that I command you. Do not be dismayed by them, lest I dismay you before them. And behold, I make you this day a fortified city, an iron pillar, a bronze wall, against the whole land, against the kings of Judah, its officials, its priests, and the people of the land. They will fight against you, but they shall not prevail against you. For I am with you, declares the Lord, to deliver you. Now, in these opening verses, we have four active verbs that describe God's part in this process. The words that God uses here to describe this calling out of Jeremiah, he uses the active verb formed, the verb knew, the verb consecrated, and the verb appointed. And the significance of this unveiling of God's purpose for Jeremiah was an indication of the vastness of the task to which he was calling him. God was saying that this process, my process in bringing you to this point, has been underway before you ever even knew it. Jeremiah, I've had you selected for a long time, even before your birth. And God wants Jeremiah to know, because God knows what Jeremiah's reaction is going to be. God knew that Jeremiah was going to say, I can't speak very well, and I'm way too young to do this. And so God, in making his case to fortify Jeremiah, to build him up, he says, all of these things have been taking place. And immediately Jeremiah is confronted with the enormity of what he is being called to do. He's immediately appointed a prophet to the nations. Immediately, that's his assignment. Doesn't say, Jeremiah, I'm going to leave you here in Anathoth for a while and let you grow and mature. He didn't say, you know, I'm going to put you over here in this discreet place where you can kind of figure things out. He didn't say, immediately he said, after I formed you, after I knew you, after I consecrated you, after I appointed you, he says, this is your assignment. You are to be a prophet to the nations. You're to go, and he tells him, he says, this is what you're to do. Your assignment is to pluck up, to break down, to destroy, to overthrow, to build, and to plant. That's overwhelming. Sounds like a preacher's call. I mean, amazingly, this young man, this man who had no prior knowledge that God was up to this in his life, is all of a sudden taken from his youthfulness, given the fact, and he's told by God, that I knew you, I formed you, I consecrated you, I appointed you before you ever even knew it. And this is what I've appointed you to do, to be a prophet to the nations. And this is what you're going to do to those nations. You're going to pluck them up. You're going to destroy. You're going to build up. You're going to overflow. You're going to plant. So what we learn from this is part of Jeremiah's responsibility was to be constructive. The last two terms indicate constructiveness, to build and to plant. We like those kind of assignments. Those are the assignments that whet our appetite as a Christian. As a follower of Jesus, we want to build people up. We want to see people grow. We want to see their roots grow deep, and we want to see them become a faithful, fruitful follower of Jesus Christ. We long for that. But the bigger part of Jeremiah's assignment is destructive. You're to pluck up, to break down, to destroy, and to overflow. Okay? Overthrow. I mean, can you imagine you're having to weigh all this. You know, God, you're overwhelming me, God. This is just too much. How can I possibly do this? And so the reaction of Jeremiah to the reality of this ministry of such a magnitude and character wasn't I will, like Isaiah said. When God gave Isaiah the call, what did Isaiah say? Here am I, send me. I will go. That wasn't Jeremiah's response. He did not respond like Isaiah did. Jeremiah said, I cannot. I cannot do this. It's not of an Isaiah that is strong, and Isaiah is moving in this cleansing direction, as I'll reference in just a moment. Isaiah and Jeremiah are so similar, and they're the longest prophets in the Old Testament. But Isaiah, Isaiah had come to the temple for a time of confession. I'm a man of unclean lips in the midst of a people of unclean lips. And the seraphim come with the coal, and they touch his lips. And Isaiah is a changed man. I saw the Lord high and lifted up in his temple. That was Isaiah's experience with his encounter with God. And when God finally got around to the calling of Jeremiah, whom shall I send? And Isaiah was ready to go because of this cleansing, purifying experience that he had. Isaiah was ready and in a place to say, I will go, Lord. I will go to the nations. And I will carry out that responsibility. I will do that. But Jeremiah wasn't there yet. Jeremiah's young. He's just now coming into the opportunity and the understanding of what God is calling him to do. And out of this, God calls him to take on this enormous responsibility. And Jeremiah, you can almost hear him. He's tender. He's timid. He's not a confident young man. I mean, when he said, Ah, Lord God, behold, I do not know how to speak, for I am only a youth. You can hear the tenderness of his heart. He wasn't angry with God. He wasn't arguing with God. He was just expressing his faith. Lord, I'm so young. I'm so inexperienced. How can I possibly take on this assignment? And granted, two things that would seem to be insurmountable for a prophet to be respected. One is, you would expect a prophet to be eloquent in speech. You would expect them to be good spokespeople with authority and excitement and conviction. You would expect a prophet to have that. And the first thing out of Jeremiah's mouth is, Lord, I'm not eloquent. I can't speak. That would be a downer for a prophet. And then youthfulness. Who's going to respect me as a prophet? How are they going to look at me when I go and tell them this message? Are they even going to listen? Are they even going to listen to me? When I was called back to be the pastor at 12th Street, one of my biggest concerns in coming back was the fact that I had grown up there. They knew me. They really knew me. Okay, from birth to high school and college and they really need me. And when I was approached about submitting my resume, one of my concerns and one of the things I raised with the chairman of the committee was, will you respect me as your pastor? I was 22, 23 years old when I left, and I'm 47 years old now. Lots happened in those 25 or so years. I'm not the little kid, the little runt kid that ran around the church and got into all kind of mischief. And that's not who you're calling back. You're calling back a guy that has pastored for over 20 years, and I want to know if you'll be able to respect me. And of course, nobody can answer that question any more than Jeremiah could think and imagine how they might respond. But he had no proof of it, neither did I. And so when I did come back to be the pastor of the church, I was pleasantly surprised that I was respected. That they accepted, you know, who I was, and, you know, just had a wonderful ministry there. I look at Jeremiah, and Jeremiah's going to have a hard ministry, but he's going to accomplish what God sets him out to do. And just as my protest to the church that called me as their pastor, my church, and I did protest. I had other protests of reasons why it wasn't a good idea. They didn't accept them. They said, well, you need to let us consider you. And along those lines, God did not accept Jeremiah's protest of inadequacy. Instead, what God told him was that if he will submit to him and his work and leadership in his life, he's going to equip him for the ministry he's calling him to do. And that's what God does for each and every one of us. When God calls us out and he sets us aside or gives us an assignment, whatever it may be, God is not just going to put you out there without strengthening you and equipping you to do the task that he's called you to do. None of us, when God calls us out, whatever, whether it's a Sunday school teacher, a deacon, an usher, whatever, a committee member, whatever it is, or a missionary, whatever God calls us out to do, all of us have apprehensions about that. Can I really do that? Can I be a deacon? Can I be a Sunday school teacher? Can I serve well in that capacity? And well, we should, because we should be humbled. Because this is not our idea, this is God's idea. And amazingly, you know, God takes a guy who didn't feel like he could be a deacon and makes him into a wonderful deacon and a servant of the Lord. A Sunday school teacher who didn't have confidence to teach Bible can become a wonderful Bible teacher. And it is true, that story has been written over and over and over again. And this is what God assures Jeremiah with. He told him, do not say, I am only a youth, for to all to whom I send you, you shall go, and whatever I command you, you shall speak. Do not be afraid of them, for I am with you to deliver you, declares the Lord. I'm sending you to the lines. Yeah, it's a tough crowd. But God says, I'm not going to leave you alone. I'm not going to put you out there and leave you by yourself. And so the Lord gives him this charge. You're going to do what I'm assigning you to do. And I'm going to be there with you every step of the way. And in this, we see, in those verses, we see a couple of things. First of all, we see this conviction of divine authority. Twice God tells him, he says, you shall go to the nations. You shall speak the words that I command you. And when God said that, Jeremiah's just responded with acknowledging what his weaknesses are. And God speaks those words in that solemn charge, and it's almost like as the story begins to develop, all of his feelings of inadequacy, all of his timidity about doing what God has called him to do, it's like they begin to be began to be swept aside. And it's made clear to him that this charge, Jeremiah, is not up for debate. You're not going to get out that easy by confessing your weaknesses. That's not enough for me to release you from this assignment. And Jeremiah began to sense, you know, this is God speaking to me. This has divine authority. And that carries so much weight. And that authority of the Lord demanded unquestioning obedience. I'm not going to discuss it, but a second thing was a consciousness of God's presence. Verse 7 talks to us about this divine authority as God tells him what he's going to do. And the divine authority by him going and speaking. So verse 8 gives him this promise of his presence. Do not be afraid, for I am with you to deliver you, declares the Lord. I'm not going to leave you alone. I'm going to be there. I'm going to be there for you as you discharge these duties. It's a declaration. And then God gives him this divine communication of power. There's divine authority. There's divine protection. But then he speaks to him. Look at what he says in verse 9. He says, behold, I have put my words in your mouth. Then the Lord put out his hand, touched his mouth, and the Lord said, behold, I have put my words in your mouth. Now, this communication of the word of the Lord in this symbolic act was not so much to purify. This is what I was talking about. When the lips of Jeremiah were touched, it was purifying. I'm a man of unclean lips in the midst of a people of unclean lips. And when the seraphim brought the coal and touched, it was a purifying, it was a cleansing act for Jeremiah to empower him and to send him forth. But for Jeremiah, it was this empowering presence of God that just really overwhelmed him. The bestowal of the gift of the prophecy. Jeremiah, I have put my words in you. I've given you the script. I've told you what I want you to do. Can you imagine what this did for this young man? Can you imagine the confidence that he has as he thinks about this, the conviction of divine authority? You shall go. You shall say, Jeremiah, God is speaking to you. This consciousness of God's presence. I will go with you. Wherever you go, I will be with you. And then this communication of power. Jeremiah, I'm putting my words in your mouth that you were going to say. Overwhelming. What a change is coming over Jeremiah's as he begins this journey. And then we come to those latter verses, 11 through 19. Soon after this call, or perhaps complementary to the call, God confirmed his word to Jeremiah by the means of two visions. Two visions, a command and a promise. Jeremiah's first vision is there in verse 11, where he says, God asked him, said, what do you see? He said, I see an almond branch or an almond tree. This is reassuring because God tells him what he's telling him. God reveals to him what this vision is. He look at verse 12. Then the Lord said to me, you have seen well, for I am watching over my word to perform it. Now the reason this is significant is because the almond tree in Palestine was the first tree to wake up, okay? When springtime comes, the almond tree is the first tree to wake up and to bloom. And so when Jeremiah says, he looks and he sees this vision of the almond tree, this was particularly encouraging because it was God telling him, I'm awake, Jeremiah. I'm watching. I'm looking. And that's exactly the way God put over my word to perform it. Jeremiah, I'm not sending you out and then walking away. God is there with him, and he's speaking this word to him. The first tree to wake up, Jeremiah would have known that, having grown up in the region. Jeremiah would have been accustomed to that. People would be excited when the almond tree blossoms. That would be a sign of spring coming. People would be enthusiastic about that. When several years ago I was ministering several years, we had a mission trip in Vermont, a mission partnership in Vermont, and we would go up there. And the first time I went up there, I called the lady that I was speaking at a church and preaching at a church in Washington, Vermont. And I called the lady to work out some details. I said, well, how's the weather there? She said, we are so excited, we have mud. And the reason they were excited about mud is because that meant the ground was thawing after a hard winter. The ground was, and so they liked the mud. They liked seeing the water on the ground. They call that mud season. And that excited them because that was for them, after a harsh winter, their first sign of spring was the mud. For the people of Israel and Palestine and for Jeremiah, it was a sign that things were waking up. And for Jeremiah, it was his signal that God is awake and he is alert and he is watching to perform his word, to make sure that it is done. Then he gives him a second vision, not quite as pleasant. He introduces Jeremiah to the political side of what he's going to be doing. The implication of the political side of divine judgment. And he introduces him to the kingdoms of the north. And it's debatable over who those are. We'll talk a little bit more about that in just a minute before we wrap up. But he sees this boiling pot, and it's very specific. The boiling pot is facing away from the north there in verse 13. And God explains the significance of it there in verse 14. He says, then the Lord said to me, out of the north, disaster shall be let loose upon all the inhabitants of the land. For behold, I am calling all the tribes of the kingdoms of the north, declares the Lord, and they shall come, and every one shall set his throne at the entrance of the gates of Jerusalem, against its walls, all around, and against all the cities. So this is not quite as encouraging as the almond tree. Now the reason God gives this vision is because his people have been guilty of idolatry. They have forsaken the true God and are worshiping idols. That's what God tells him in verse 16. I will declare all my judgments against him for all their evil in forsaking me. They made offerings to other gods. So God doesn't hide anything. Jeremiah, the almond tree is there to let you know I'm awake, I'm alert, and my word is going to go forth, and I'm going to make sure of it. I'm going to watch my work perform. But the boiling pot is a sign of divine judgment. And the reason God is pronouncing divine judgment upon his people is, and he tells us, because they have worshipped idols and they have forsaken him. Traditionally, the foe that would come, that we would associate, as we will see, the foe from the north is going to be a prominent theme in the book of Jeremiah. We're going to hear that term over and over and over again. Most probably, it is a reference to Babylon, because they're the ones who are going to come in and sack Jerusalem about 40 years after Jeremiah's call. But when you think about it, though, just to put it in proper perspective, since Judah is bounded on the east by the desert and bounded on the west by the sea, and on the south by Egypt, it could be anybody from the north. You see what I'm saying? It could have been any country or any nation that was to the north of Israel, because that was really the only way to come in. It didn't come from the south, so we know that it wasn't Egypt. So whoever the prophet had in mind as the evil out of the north, he regarded them as the instrument of God's purpose to punish Judah. To punish Judah for their sins, for their forsaking of him, for their falling away from him. So here we have the young prophet as the chapter comes to a close. He's standing before the Lord. He's called, he's commissioned, he's confirmed by the watching God who is awake to perform his word of judgment in advance of the ruthless powers from the north. And Jeremiah becomes painfully aware and conscious of how his own people will react when such a message is delivered. We continue to see the sensitivity of his spirit as he recoils in horror. But then another command of the Lord comes and fortifies him for what lies ahead. Look at verse 17. But you dress yourself for work. Arise and say to them everything that I commanded you. Do not be dismayed by them, lest I dismay you before them. This is what God is saying to him. You shall, the literal translation, the Hebrew translation reads like this. But you shall gird up your loins. You shall arise and you shall speak to them all that I myself shall command you. This is what God is telling him. He knows, he's got a sense of the reaction. The girding up of loins was an Oriental idiom, an Oriental phrase that meant to gather up your flowing robe as tight as you can so that you can move quickly. God's command to Jeremiah for action in announcing his word is followed by the promise of his strength for the task. And the promise is repeated and again. Look at verse 18. Look at what he says to Jeremiah. And I, behold, I make you this day, talking to Jeremiah, I make you this day a fortified city. I make you an iron pillar. I make you bronze walls against the whole land, against the kings and the priests, against the kings of Judah, its officials, its priests, and the people of the land. So God tells Jeremiah after all this, he says, like a fortified city, you will be kept secure. Like an iron pillar, you will be made strong. Like a bronze wall, you will resist attack. But he even promised him more than strength for the battle. He promised him deliverance in the midst of the battle. Look at verse 19. They will fight against you, but they shall not prevail against you, for I am with you, declares the Lord, to deliver you. Now, this does not mean that Jeremiah is not going to experience ridicule and suffering and defeats, but it encouraged him to believe that in his darkest hour, the Lord is going to be with him. The Lord is going to empower him to accomplish his holy mission. Jeremiah, you will finish what we're starting today. I tell you folks, it's just a phenomenal opening chapter that's going to set the tone. And we see Jeremiah probably at some of his strongest time right now. But as he goes forth and delivers this message to the people, as God has instructed him, as he moves forward with that, he's going to be a broken man. There's a reason why he's called the weeping prophet, because he is going to have some deep, dark days. And God is going to have to reassure him and remind him, I am with you every step of the way. You are a fortified city. You are an iron pillar. You are bronze walls. I'm going to see you through. And we've all had experiences like that, most likely, that we didn't feel like we could do something. And God amazingly, providentially, and beautifully, inexplicably empowers us to do what we thought we could not do. Jeremiah is going to be a profound, profound prophet. And we got to see firsthand how it all started as God commissioned his young man to go and do the work of ministry. All right? So it's going to get better. We got some really exciting things that are going to happen, some heartbreaking things that will just tear us apart when we read it, especially when we get to Jeremiah chapter 8. So I hope you'll hang in there with me. I hope some more will be able to come and join us. I know everybody's still a little leery, but hopefully there'll be more that'll come and join us, and we're going to have a good time digging into the book of Jeremiah. Anybody have any questions?